This is the July 2026 edition of Review, the Journal of Blind Veterans UK. You could win £1,000 every week. Play for the chance to win one of 34 prizes while also helping rebuild the lives of blind veterans. £1 per play plus £15,000 prize up for grabs four times a year. Sign up online at blindveterans.org.uk/lottery. You must be 18 all over and live in Great Britain to play or claim a prize. Full terms and conditions apply. Please see lottery.blindveterans.org.uk/lottery/terms/conditions for more. Listening and Reflecting by Giles Peel, Chair of the Board of Trustees. As I write this introduction to our July issue, I have just concluded my second full board meeting as Chair. This marks an important milestone for me personally and has provided an invaluable opportunity for me to listen and reflect. A central focus of the discussion was the wealth of feedback gathered from our recent member conferences. I would like to extend my sincere thanks to everyone who attended, contributed so thoughtfully, and took the time to share their perspectives. Your input is, and always will be, essential in ensuring that our direction remains aligned with the needs and ambitions of our community of blind veterans and their family members, friends, and supporters. The conversations that emerged from these conferences were wide-ranging, constructive, and encouraging. It was particularly reassuring to hear of the openness and engagement across the sessions. I'm pleased to say that this feedback is already helping to inform the charity's thinking as we move forward, and it will play an important role in shaping our priorities in the months ahead. I look forward to sharing more updates with you as this work develops. Member Jules has provided his own report on the conference he attended, which you will hear later in this recording. I have also been delighted to hear about the strong momentum behind the new Member Ambassador programme. Even at this early stage, this initiative is resonating and beginning to make a positive difference by strengthening connections across our network. The enthusiasm and commitment shown by those already involved is inspiring, and it speaks to the strength of our membership community. I'm confident that the programme will play a vital role in enhancing both member engagement and the visibility of the charity as we continue to grow. And you will hear more about this further in our recording. As we move into the summer months, I hope you are able to enjoy a well-earned break and take the opportunity to recharge, whether that involves time with family and friends, travel, or simply a change of pace. I hope it brings both rest and renewal. There will be no issue of Review published in August, so this edition will carry us through until our next publication in September. In the meantime, thank you once again for your continued support, insights, and commitment to our community. I wish you all a very enjoyable summer and look forward to reconnecting in the autumn with renewed energy and a shared sense of purpose. News. Jack completes the Newport Marathon. On the 19th of April, Jack, 26, and from Lincolnshire, took on his first ever marathon in Newport alongside three of his army friends, Zach, Christian and Nathan, all of whom served with the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Jack's granddad, Terry, who is 80, started losing his sight around 3 years ago due to macular degeneration and has received our support since 2024. Jack says, "I'm really happy that Grandad is looked after by Blind Veterans UK. They also support my grandmother. What the charity does for people like my granddad is phenomenal, and I wanted to do something to enable them to support more veterans like him." Jack's granddad, Terry, served with the 1st Battalion Royal Green Jackets. He joined as a rifleman in 1965, and during his service, he was stationed in Hong Kong, Norway, Northern Ireland, Cyprus, Germany, and the Falkland Islands. He served for 22 years and retired in 1987 as a warrant officer, Class 2. Jack is keen to encourage others to take on their own fundraising challenge, saying, "As soon as I got in touch with the charity's fundraising team, I've had nothing but support with a consistent back and forth of information. I was pointed in the right direction and supported to help set up my own fundraising page and given tips on how to maximise my fundraising and reach more people. We were also provided with t-shirts to wear." You can congratulate Jack and donate to his fundraising page at www.blindveterans.org.uk/Jack. Brighton bus named after D-Day veteran Ken. A Brighton bus has been named after the late blind veteran Ken Hobbs, who was one of the first to land on Sword Beach on D-Day and later lived at our rehabilitation centres in Ovingdon and Rustington. The Brighton and Hove Buses Coaster Route, the bus now carries Ken's name on the front with an information panel inside sharing his story with passengers. The tribute is especially fitting as Ken had a strong connection to the route. After leaving the army, he worked as a bus driver with Southdown Motor Services for 8 years and drove the route now served by the bus named in his honour. The route also passes our former rehabilitation centre in Ovingdean, the place Ken called home after he lost his sight. Ken, who was born in East Sussex, joined the Royal Army Service Corps as a driver in 1942. On the 6th of June 1944, he was among the Allied troops who landed in Normandy. Before arriving on the beach, Ken helped waterproof the vehicles that would be driven ashore by extending the exhaust pipes and sealing them. He drove onto Sword Beach at 7:30 a.m. Remembering that morning, Ken said the beach was noisy and that German forces were waiting for them. When asked if he was scared, he simply said, "You had to do it, that was it." Ken shared his memories of D-Day with us shortly before he sadly passed away in April 2024, aged 101. He was one of the first veterans to receive the Légion d'honneur, France's highest order of merit, in recognition of his role of the liberation of France. Brighton and Hove Buses has been naming its buses after people who have made a significant contribution to the local area since 1999. Other names include Norman Cook, Chris Eubank and our founder, Sir Arthur Pearson. Jo Parker-Smith, our community engagement lead, thanked Brighton and Hove Buses for the tribute and for its ongoing dedication to providing accessible bus services in the local area, helping blind veterans regain their independence. She says, "This is such a wonderful and fitting way to remember Ken, and I know he would think it was marvellous." Recruitment drive for two new trustees. Blind Veterans UK is recruiting two new trustees to strengthen its board and support the charity's future direction. One role focuses on finance, including membership of a new finance and investment subcommittee, while the second seeks expertise in NHS management or healthcare, ideally with a military connection. The roles close at the beginning of August and end of July, respectively. Full details on both opportunities, including how to apply, can be found on the members area of our website at www.blindveterans.org.uk/trustees. Members interested in applying can also request support by telephoning 0300 111 2233. Soprasteria fundraising hike. Our wonderful corporate partners from Soprasteria joined us recently for an incredibly successful 11-kilometre fundraising hike in South Downs National Park. 55 Soprasteria staff joined with 10 of our members who were attending an activity taster week at Rustington to take on the hike. This allowed our partners from Soprasteria to get stuck in and see the success of our rehabilitation programme in action, get to know our members and stop for a nice picnic along the way. The general public could see our group coming a mile off as hordes of fundraisers and members trekked over the landscape, supporting each other and chatting as they went. After the walk, everyone gathered at the Rustington Centre to celebrate their achievement and enjoy a buffet and live music. A big thank you to the Sopra Stereo team for taking on this challenge to raise £20,000, and a big well done to all. In your community, hear about some of the social gatherings across the country that have taken place this summer and brought together members in their local areas. Volunteers Week celebrations across the country. This month, our community teams have been holding a lot of volunteer-focused events, coffee mornings, lunches, etc., to celebrate the wonderful work our volunteers do and to give them our utmost thanks for the difference they make to our veterans on a daily basis. Rustington and local community volunteers gathered for a special Volunteers Week event, a morning filled with coffee, cake and meaningful conversations, followed by an afternoon of training. In the Greater Manchester area, three volunteer events were held in New Brighton, Walkden and Stockport, giving our volunteers an opportunity to meet others who share their mission, have a good laugh and a chat over coffee. In Kent, volunteers gathered for a coffee morning where they reminisced about all of the work they've done and the joy they've had over the years of volunteering. And Volunteer John was presented his Founders Award in recognition of all the hours he has given to the charity over the last 15 years. Communities in Lancashire and Cumbria took a different approach to thanking their volunteers and sent out a lovely order of letterbox cakes to their volunteers. With the support of Sponge, volunteers received delicious delights such as Victoria's Sponge and chocolate caramel fudge cake through the post. There are a number of other volunteer events going on in communities around the country, and wherever you are, we wish to say a great big thank you. In Lincolnshire, members rediscovered their passion for driving in an unforgettable blindfold driving experience. Participants climbed into 4x4 off-road vehicles and took turns navigating a purpose-built course packed with challenging terrain, including mud, water, steep inclines, descents and side slopes. With blindfolds on, each driver relied entirely on clear verbal instructions from the instructor seated beside them, guiding every turn and adjustment along the way. After just a few moments, initial nerves gave way to confidence and drivers quickly settled into the experience, tackling the course with skill and enthusiasm, even as the obstacles became more demanding. Following the recent warm weather, the rain in the days leading up to the event added an extra element of fun, creating puddles and muddy stretches to power through. Thankfully, no one needed to jump out and push their vehicle free from the deeper sections. In North Wales, members, widows, friends and family got together in North Wales for a coach trip around the best and most beautiful sites North Wales has to offer. The coach driver talked our members through the sites and did an excellent job of explaining the history of North Wales and imparting his knowledge. After a shopping and refreshment stop in Battersea Coed, the group drove further into Erie National Park, Snowdonia, enjoying the views before enjoying a lunch at Froncock Garden Centre. It was a bus full of joy and our members had a day full of smiles, meaningful conversations and fun. In Dudley, members enjoyed a day out to Dudley, Canal and Caverns. They took a 45-minute trip on a narrowboat down the canal, only covering 6% of the vast network of tunnels and caverns built to mine limestone. The knowledgeable skipper guided veterans about the history of the network and ensured that the tour was as accessible as possible. Members then enjoyed each other's company over lunch in a beautiful room overlooking the canal. This was a very memorable trip and our members had a wonderful time exploring whilst making new friends. Do you want to know what's going on in your local area? Contact your local community team who can tell you everything you need to know. Regional Conferences 2026. In May, the charity held five regional conferences in Grantham, Cardiff, Basingstoke, Belfast and Edinburgh. One of the attendees in Basingstoke was new member ambassador Jules Lee, and he writes of his experience. On Thursday, 14th May, I attended the regional conference at Basingstoke. I wanted to write about it from the perspective of members, so during and in the evening after, I spoke with and listened to the views of many who attended. Hopefully, this reflects those viewpoints. The introduction by our CEO, Adrian Bell, was appreciated by all, though many felt it could have been longer, with more opportunity to raise questions. The general consensus was the balance was about right, allowing other topics on the agenda to be discussed. One of the issues that arose was the disparity of the levels of support members receive around the country. Whenever members meet at national regional events or at Rustington, those differences become apparent. One example was the range of opportunities members have to attend local social coffee mornings and lunches. Some areas were well served, while some members felt left out. One suggestion was made for a national list of all regular meetings be made available, a proposal many thought worthwhile. Leading on from this, a comment was raised that our community geographical boundaries should not preclude members taking part in events hosted by a different community. Speaking with some others in the evening, I was surprised by how members felt that their involvement with Blind Veterans UK only existed in their community. That last point may explain why so many of those attending said it was a wonderful experience to meet so many different members, and they had learnt so much about the charity, particularly by chatting with other members. Sandra Fruish, a consultant with an impressive background of charity work, spoke about membership. Sandra gave four different wordings to describe what the charity should be for us as members, and more importantly, how we should look for all those we need to introduce to Blind Veterans UK for the future. For those who had attended previous regional and all national conferences, some were keen to hear a more direct update on the charity becoming a formal membership association. This has been discussed for some time and is generally well supported, so a number of attendees would have welcomed a more detailed update. At Basingstoke, Aaron Garrett, Service Development Manager, spoke about families and carers, although different staff led this session at other conferences. A number of members attending were accompanied by their partners, and from chatting to some, it seems a challenge for them to see themselves as carers. It was welcome that the charity is doing more to see what it can offer family members and carers, and it was recognised in the room the vital role they play. The subject of Carers Week at Rustington was raised, though there was some confusion as to who looks after the member if the carer is at the centre. An alternative was raised, where the member has a week at the centre, whilst the carers have their own week at a centre, such as Warners or Potters. Sam Dutton and Glynis Gillen talked about addressing issues which would be of importance to new members joining the charity and others considering it. We discussed these around each of the tables where we were seated, led by a member of staff. I gave the final talk, a brief word about the ambassador role and my experiences of talking to corporate supporters along with smaller groups. The feedback was positive, with everyone agreeing the importance of spreading the word about the incredible work our charity does. Particularly amongst those who had attended previous conferences, there was disappointment that there was no Q&A session with Adrian. These have been quite lively previously, but a great deal can be learnt from these sessions. I know one member had five or six questions prepared. The majority of attendees enjoyed the conference and learned a great deal about the charity. The facilities and location were well appreciated, and it is always welcome to meet fellow members throughout the day and at the dinner in the evening. And you can read a full write-up on the topics discussed at blindveterans.org.uk/conference. The Forgotten Torquay Annex of St Dunstan's, 1915 to 1918, Part 1, by Blind Veterans UK volunteer and amateur historian Andy Hayes. By chance, I came across a photograph in a local history Facebook group showing a Torquay building captioned Convalescent Home for Blinded Soldiers and Sailors, Torquay Annex of St Dunstan's Hostel. That single image led me to a largely forgotten chapter in the history of support for blind veterans. What followed was the story of a short-lived yet remarkable annex in Torquay that operated between 1915 and 1918. Although the charity's main base was in London, Torquay became the location of a convalescent home that played an important supporting role during the First World War. Whilst often described as an annex of St Dunstan's, the Torquay home consistently maintained that it operated independently, a distinction that would later prove significant. The initiative began locally. The Torquay and South Devon Home Teaching Society for the Blind, founded in 1910, provided an existing framework of support. Momentum grew after Mrs. Frances Inkersley, wife of the American journalist and author Arthur Inkersley, published an appeal in March 1915, asking whether anything could be done in Torquay for men who had lost their sight in the war. The response was immediate and generous. Fundraising began quickly, including a concert at the Torquay Pavilion, which raised £219, £20,000 today. This enabled the establishment of a convalescent home for wounded servicemen who needed time to recover before moving on to training at St Dunstan's in London. The aim was to support not only those who were blind, but also men recovering from multiple injuries, including amputations, paralysis, and shell shock. Mr and Mrs Inkersley offered their home, Fairfield. The large villa, set within its own grounds, could accommodate around 8 men, along with a matron and nursing staff. It provided an ideal setting for recovery, offering space, fresh air, and calm surroundings. Next door stood Ashfield, where a young Agatha Christie was living at the time, an unexpected literary connection to the story. Torquay, then regarded as one of the wealthiest towns in the country, embraced the effort wholeheartedly. Residents organised concerts and fetes, donated food and cigarettes, and even provided seeds for gardening. The annex became a true community endeavour, sustained by generosity and practical support. As the lease on Fairfield neared its end in 1916, a new home was secured at Bournebrook, generously offered rent-free by local solicitor Harry Dundee Hooper. The following year, the annex relocated again to Royden, a former nursing home taken on a 7-year lease. Its layout, with rooms opening onto gardens and space for early vocational activities, such as basket making and shoe repair, made it well suited to preparing men for the next stage of their rehabilitation. In September 1917, Sir Arthur Pearson visited Royden and wrote afterwards that he was delighted with everything he saw. Despite this, tensions between Pearson and the Torquay Committee soon began to emerge. The question of control was central. The committee continued to emphasise its total financial independence, while St Dunstan's took an increasingly direct interest in how the home was run. Disputes followed over staffing, governance and funding. The committee noted that although maintenance payments were being handled through official channels, no direct financial support had been received from St Dunstan's during the 3 years of operation. By the end of 1917, relations had significantly deteriorated. In February 1918, the situation reached an impasse. Sir Arthur Pearson informed the committee that all men would be withdrawn, and soon after, the residents were transferred to another establishment at St Leonard's-on-Sea. With their departure, the Torquay Annex came to an end. For the people of Torquay, who had supported the home so generously, with time, money and care, its closure marked a disappointing conclusion to 3 years of dedicated effort. Nevertheless, its contribution should not be overlooked. The Annex provided care, dignity and support at a time of great need and played its part in the wider work that continues today through Blind Veterans UK. Its legacy also lives on in the stories of the men who passed through it. Among them was one individual whose experience attracted considerable attention at the time and continues to fascinate today. His name was Alfred Percy Charles Appleby, and his story includes an extraordinary moment in which he was said to have regained his sight in the most unexpected way. And that story, involving a Persian cat and a moment of shock that changed his life will be explored in the next issue. From the Somme to today, Blind Veterans UK and 110 years of support. The origins of our charity trace right back to one of the most devastating periods in British military history, the First World War. The charity emerged in response to growing numbers of servicemen who returned from the front blinded by modern warfare. The Battle of the Somme in 1916, with its heavy artillery and shrapnel, came to symbolise both the scale of the conflict and the life-changing injuries endured by thousands. An estimated 30,000 veterans lost their sight during the First World War, but little could be done medically in 1916 for catastrophic eye injuries. Survivors often faced a future of isolation, poverty, and dependency. In this context, Blind Veterans UK played a revolutionary role. Rather than treating blindness as the end of a useful life, we helped veterans rebuild independence, confidence, and purpose. Training in mobility, everyday skills and employment challenged the assumption that people who had lost their sight were destined only for charity or institutional care. This included many of the activities that we still facilitate today, including creating music, playing sports, woodworking, social events, and learning how to get around. There are still wooden trays, boxes and furniture in our archives made by blind veterans of the First World War. Central to this transformation was Sir Ian Fraser, later Lord Fraser of Lonsdale. Fraser was himself a product of the Somme. Serving as a young captain with the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, he was blinded by a bullet during the battle in 1916. Sent to St Dunstan's to recover, he experienced firsthand the charity's pioneering approach to rehabilitation, an experience that shaped both his own future and the organisation's direction. Fraser became chairman of St Dunstan's in 1921, a role he held for more than 50 years. As Lord Fraser, he was a leading national advocate for blind and disabled people. He believed rehabilitation should be practical, demanding, and rooted in dignity. Under his leadership, the charity expanded training programmes and strengthened its commitment to supporting veterans, not just at the point of injury, but throughout their lives. Lord Fraser also became a powerful link between battlefield experience and civilian society. He demonstrated that disability need not limit ambition. Beyond the charity, he served as an MP and a governor of the BBC, using his platform to challenge wider perceptions of blindness. His leadership helped cement St Dunstan's reputation as a forward-thinking organisation shaped by veterans for veterans. The legacy of the Somme and the First World War remains embedded in Blind Veterans UK's identity and public memory. A statue of blind World War I soldiers has stood outside Manchester Piccadilly Station since 2018, reminding passers-by of the human cost of conflict and the determination required to rebuild a life without sight. While methods and technologies have evolved, our core mission remains unchanged from 110 years ago: to help blind veterans live lives of independence, fulfilment, and dignity. From supporting young soldiers blinded on the muddy fields of the Somme to helping modern veterans navigate life after service, we are proud of our history and how we continue to be pioneers in the field of sight loss rehabilitation. Jerry's Double 100 Kilometre Ultra Challenge. A story of Jerry's determination to go twice the distance and push himself to his limits. Member Jerry Bradley from Dorset is taking on two 100 kilometre endurance walking challenges this year to raise money for Blind Veterans UK. Jerry, 63, from Weymouth, completed the Jurassic Coast Ultra Challenge on the 16th of May and will be taking part in the South Coast Ultra on the 5th of September. Two ultras totalling 200 kilometres and aiming to raise £2,000. In 2025, Jerry joined a team of blind veterans to take on the South Coast Ultra, and this year he did it again. He walked the full 100 kilometres alongside his guide, volunteer coordinator Anne Forsberg. The pair crossed the finish line in 28 hours and 16 minutes, and Jerry was the 256th finisher for the event. He says, "The event was mentally and physically tough. Walking through the night was harder than I thought it would be, as where my head torch shone on the ground was just at the place I couldn't see, but luckily Anne had a glow stick attached to the back of her bag and I was able to follow that. I wore a lot of preventative plasters and luckily escaped any blisters. We took 8 breaks along the way, which gradually increased in length. The final stop, we had an hour-long breakfast and lots of cups of tea." Jerry served in the RAF for 13 years. Problems with his sight surfaced in 1996 when he left the RAF, but it wasn't until 2003 that he was diagnosed with Stargardt disease, which is a genetic eye condition. He says, "Everyone has one blind spot in each eye, but with Stargardt disease you have 3 and mine are growing. I've lost my central vision. I also have Charles Bonnet syndrome, which means I see things that are not there. Since being supported by the charity, my confidence to try new things has grown. I'd never walked 100 kilometres in one hit, but the effort of my other blind veterans motivated me to do it. I wasn't going to let them down. The organisation of the Ultra events is incredible, and the team behind it ensure that the events are accessible for those of us with sight loss." Anne, who works at Blind Veterans UK as a volunteer coordinator, was Jerry's guide in 2025 and is joining him again for the 2 Ultra Challenges this year. He says, "I am so grateful to Anne for her ongoing support. She has enabled me to have the opportunity to take on these challenges, find purpose and build my confidence." Jerry has gone from saying never again to taking on not one but 2 Ultra Challenges in 2026. He says, "It was while on an outward bound trip in the Lake District with Blind Veterans UK that I decided to sign up again and to join my fellow blind veterans for the South Coast Ultra once more. The camaraderie is fantastic and we all support one another to take on the distances we can manage. The training is fantastic for my fitness and for filling my time. I find the empty time the hardest thing about my sight loss, but I now go out walking 5 days a week. Sometimes I'm joined by friends and other times I end up joining up with people that I meet while out walking. I'm lucky to have so many lovely walks where I live. I decided to take on the Jurassic Coast Ultra in addition to the South Coast Ultra as it's local to me and I fancied giving it a go, and the double challenge pushes me a bit further. There'll be no time for hanging up my boots in between as I'll need to keep my fitness up. I'm really looking forward to taking part again. If Jerry has inspired you to take on your own Ultra Challenge in aid of Blind Veterans UK, you can contact fundraising@blindveterans.org.uk to find out more." Who says those with sight loss can't drive a car? Former Blind Veterans UK chair and motor racing enthusiast Barry Coop tells of member Wayne's experience driving a car again, and how any members who miss this can do the same. "About a year ago, I presented a Blind Veterans UK award to Wayne Pope, one of our working age members, who is succeeding in achieving victory over blindness. After presenting the award, I asked Wayne what he missed most as a result of his sight loss journey. 'Driving my car,' was his response. His answer stayed with me. I remember being a little boy sitting in the back of my father's Jaguar as he drove along the runway at Wharton in Lancashire on a Saturday. I would shout, 'Go on, Dad, nearly 120 miles an hour,' before my uncle urgently called, 'For heaven's sake, brake now, Des.' It is why I used to say, 'My father is not blind, it's just that he can't see.' That memory gave me a determination to help Wayne enjoy being behind the wheel again in a safe and legal setting. Initial approaches to Castlecombe and Goodwood were unsuccessful because of insurance restrictions. Then Wayne found Speed of Sight, a charity based at the Three Sisters racetrack near Wigan in Lancashire. It was founded by Mike Newman, who was born blind and dreamed of becoming a racing driver. Mike went on to achieve several world land speed records. The charity's motto is to prove that disability does not mean inability, a message that everyone connected with Blind Veterans UK can support. A date was booked and Wayne and I travelled to Wigan to experience the thrills offered by this remarkable charity. During the day, I lost count of the number of times Wayne said, "Wow." He was excited and with good reason. Speed of Sight has specially prepared cars with twin steering wheels and dual controls, many also fitted with hand controls. I also drove one of the cars immediately behind Wayne, which allowed me to understand how they handled. At one point, I asked my instructor to guide me while I closed my eyes so I could experience something of what it might feel like for a totally blind driver. It was amazing. His instructions and the feel of the pedals helped me to understand the corners and the racing line. On the straight, he told me to press the accelerator. As the next bend approached, I felt the car slow as he applied pressure to the brake pedal. With each lap, it became easier to anticipate the next straight and corner. Wayne does have some usable vision, and he mastered the controls extremely well. It was wonderful to watch his confidence grow as he built up speed around the track. At the end of the session, the smile on his face said everything. It really was a wow moment. Immediately afterwards, began thinking about how many other members might love the chance to drive again, especially around a racetrack. I spoke to Mike Newman, who agreed that our veterans could really benefit from the charity's work. I have passed the details to Adrian Bell, and I hope this article will spark interest in an activity many may have thought was out of bounds. As Speed of Sight shows so powerfully, disability does not mean inability. Keeping the airwaves open. The magic of Blind Veterans UK Amateur Radio Society. For many members, radio is far more than a hobby. It is a way to stay connected, learn new skills, share experiences, and enjoy companionship across distances that might otherwise feel isolating. For nearly 50 years, the Blind Veterans UK Amateur Radio Society has provided exactly that opportunity, bringing together visually impaired radio enthusiasts from across the UK. The Society was formed in 1976 and quickly became an important part of the Blind Veterans UK community. For many years, it operated a permanent amateur radio station from the top floor of the former centre in Ovingdean. This allowed members to connect with each other from across the country, and the Society would meet in person twice a year. These gatherings became highlights of the calendar, allowing members to put faces to familiar voices and exchange ideas, experiences, and technical knowledge. Amateur radio operators are nothing but adaptable and have continued to meet across the air rather than allowing the club to fade away over the years. Members continued to meet on the air using established radio nets and frequencies. These regular radio gatherings enable members to remain in touch and continue enjoying the friendships and camaraderie that had always been at the heart of the Society. Technology has also helped the Society evolve. Alongside traditional radio communications, members now can make use of digital radio systems, internet-linked communications, and WhatsApp messaging groups. These tools allow members to stay connected between radio sessions, exchange information quickly, and support one another with technical advice and everyday conversation. Despite the convenience of modern technology, members agree that nothing quite replaces meeting in person. An exciting opportunity arose when facilities became available at the Rustington Centre, where members were invited to establish a temporary amateur radio station. The offer was enthusiastically accepted, and the necessary arrangements were made with Ofcom, the UK's communications regulator. A special club call sign, MXOSBV, was allocated for the operation. The event brought together members from across the country. Among those attending were Sue Houlihan, David Wilkinson, Alistair McGough, John Wake, Andrew Thorpe, Joanne Thorpe, Ray Peart, Claire Peart, and volunteer of 40 years, John Houlihan. John says, "I have found over time as a volunteer in St Dunstan's and Blind Veterans UK, By keeping those radioamateurs with sight loss on the air, they keep up with changing technology and continue to enjoy the companionship of radio communications that we all value so much. The gathering was not only a social occasion, but also an opportunity to demonstrate the enduring appeal and effectiveness of amateur radio. Members erected telescopic aerial poles and established the temporary station with the assistance of our Rustington staff. The British weather brought a few challenges, including strong winds and thunderstorms, but the team adapted quickly and safely whenever conditions changed. Once operational, the station made radio contacts across Europe. Using both voice and Morse code, members communicated with amateur radio operators in locations including the Azores, Portugal, Sweden, and Eastern Europe. For many participants, these contacts provided the familiar thrill of reaching distant stations using equipment they had helped to assemble and operate. The event also coincided with commemorations connected to the D-Day landings. The Society station joined a special vintage and military amateur radio society network that included a station operating from Normandy under the call sign TM82 Pegasus Bridge. Participation in this commemorative activity allowed members to combine their interest in radio with the military history that remains so important to many of our veterans. The Rustington event also provided an opportunity to strengthen links with the wider amateur radio community. Members were pleased to welcome Jim Dunn, founder of the Rustington Amateur Radio Group, who visited the station and joined members for dinner. Other visitors also included fellow blind veterans members with an interest in radio, helping introduce more people to the possibilities offered by the hobby. The success of the temporary station at Rustington demonstrated that amateur radio remains as relevant and enjoyable today as it was when the society was founded almost half a century ago. It offers opportunities for learning, friendship, community involvement and personal achievement, regardless of age or level of experience. For our members who are interested in discovering more about amateur radio, the Blind Veterans UK Amateur Radio Society extends a warm welcome. Whether you are a licensed operator, a former enthusiast returning to the hobby, or simply curious about what the society can offer, there is a place for you on the airwaves. Meet our ambassadors. Introducing you to your member ambassadors, who will represent the charity as public speakers to tell their stories across the country. Clive Jones. Clive was left fighting for his life after an unprovoked attack while he was still serving in the British Army. Following the attack, he lost his sight in both eyes and has had to overcome significant challenges to rebuild his life. He has been a fantastic role model and source of support to other members for many years and is excited to continue this as a member ambassador. Clive says, "I was put in touch with the charity while I was still in hospital, and after I was discharged, I spent 6 months at the Brighton Centre. I was taught to live again and learnt skills including cooking, ironing and using a computer. I was also trained to use a white cane, which helped me to become more mobile." During this stay, Clive was introduced to archery. He says this turned out to be a life-changing moment. "I initially laughed at the thought of a blind person with a bow and arrow, but gave it a go. I found it very therapeutic and soon signed up to British Blind Sports Archery Section." In blind archery, Clive has achieved significant success. He has been the British Blind Sport Indoor and Outdoor National Champion. He is the IBSA World Silver Medalist and is currently ranked number 4 in Europe and the world. He uses his sporting platform to help others and is the chairman of the Blind Veterans UK Bowmen, encouraging other members to give the sport a try and showing through example what is possible with sight loss. Clive has been supported by the charity for 25 years, and he supports other members by providing mentorship and support to help them adjust to sight loss. Clive is also an active Freemason and has raised over £116,000 for various charities, including Blind Veterans UK, and has contributed to his community through initiatives like installing a defibrillator and making lanyards for the NHS. Clive's dedication has been recognised with numerous accolades, including being named as a finalist for both the Soldiering On Awards and the Pride of Britain Awards, receiving 2 certificates of commendation from the Duke of Kent, and being made an honorary townsman of Market Drayton. In the 2026 New Year's Honours list, Clive was appointed a member of the British Empire for his services to Blind Veterans UK and the military community. Kay Godfrey. Kay enlisted in the Royal Navy in 1983 after being motivated by the Falklands War. After leaving the Navy in 1989, she worked as a bank manager before retraining as a secondary school and A-level history teacher. She says, "I loved bringing history to life in the classroom and inspiring young people with my enthusiasm." In 2022, Kay suffered a stroke and her sight began to deteriorate rapidly over the course of 6 months. She says, "My vision faded like a light bulb being dimmed until I was left with only a small amount of light perception, this time as frightening and deeply isolating. For months there was no clear diagnosis and I struggled to be understood by medical professionals. It felt as though I'd fallen into a big black hole with no clear way out. The sudden loss of independence was overwhelming. Everyday tasks became exhausting and required intense concentration. Kay found herself sitting at home, unsure how to move forward. She says, "This was the lowest point of my life. I felt that I had no sense of hope for the future." Kay discovered Blind Veterans UK through a leaflet at an eye clinic, and her first experiences with the charity marked a turning point. She says, "At the charity's rehabilitation centre, surrounded by others facing similar challenges, I found understanding, encouragement and belief. For the first time since losing my sight, I felt listened to and supported. It was as if someone had thrown down a ladder when I needed it most." With the help of Blind Veterans UK, Kay rebuilt her confidence and independence, learning new skills and receiving practical support, from adaptive kitchen equipment to techniques that enabled her to navigate the world again. She says, "I have regained the belief that I can try my hand at anything and can now do absolutely everything I thought I had once lost, from baking and shopping to using public transport and socialising with confidence." Kay is excited for the opportunity to give back to the charity as an ambassador. She says, "I am determined to raise awareness so others can access the same life-changing support that I've received." Kay also volunteers as a telephone befriender, offering encouragement and companionship to other members, particularly those who may feel isolated or overwhelmed. A passionate historian, Kay also shares her knowledge through social media, continuing her love of teaching in new ways. Stepping out confidently with sight loss. The mobility aids and equipment that can help when you're on the move. Stepping out independently with sight loss can feel daunting at first, but the right tools can make a significant difference. From traditional white canes to innovative smart technologies and wearable devices, listen to discover the wide range of options designed to help. Foundational mobility tools. With ongoing advances in technology, an increasing range of tools are now available to help you travel more easily and confidently. White canes. White canes are available in different styles, including long canes, cymbal canes, folding canes, and support canes. Choosing the right type depends on individual mobility needs and training. Smart canes. For those who feel confident with the basic cane and are interested in enhanced navigation support, there are a growing number of technology-based solutions available. Some smart canes now incorporate GPS navigation, object recognition using AI, smartphone connectivity, and audio and tactile feedback. These devices often pair with a smartphone app and can provide spoken directions, obstacle alerts, and location tracking. Wearable navigation devices. Emerging wearable technologies may include camera-based systems with AI object recognition, devices that provide vibration cues or spoken guidance, and tactile feedback systems worn on the body. One example currently in development is Glide, a two-wheeled mobility device designed to guide users using sensors and artificial intelligence. There are also experimental systems that provide navigation cues through vibrating shoe inserts, offering discrete directional feedback through the feet. While these technologies are promising, they may require training and smartphone integration. They should be seen as complementary to, not replacements for, core mobility skills. Guide dogs. For some people, once they can navigate confidently with a white cane, they may find that a guide dog is a helpful next step. A guide dog works in partnership with their handler and can help speed up navigation and obstacle avoidance. However, a guide dog is not for everyone, and there are strict criteria for applying for one, as well as a long application process. Recipients need to have core mobility and life skills before they apply. Increasing visibility. As well as using a cane, it can be helpful to wear items that clearly signal your sight loss to others. These simple steps can make moving through public spaces less stressful and may prompt people to offer appropriate support. Examples include badges. Just wearing something as simple as a badge can be enough to help make other people aware of your vision impairment, especially in a small space such as a pub or community hall. High-vis vests. A high-visibility vest can make all the difference when it comes to standing out, especially on roads or busy areas. You can buy vests designed specifically for people with sight loss. Lanyards. Lanyards can indicate sight loss or disability and can be especially helpful in places like airports, stations, or large venues where staff are trained to recognise them and offer support. General guidelines. Regardless of the equipment used, the fundamentals of safe travel remain the same. Plan ahead. Make sure you're confident of your route before you set off and try to travel at quieter times whenever possible. Communicate clearly. Let others know your intentions when crossing roads or moving through busy areas. Prioritise your hearing. Be as aware as you can be of what's going on around you. Avoid blocking out sounds with headphones. Use your remaining vision. Make the most of whatever vision you have. Consider sunglasses, a peaked cap, or a torch to improve contrast or reduce glare. Identify landmarks. Choose distinctive features, a specific shopfront, a unique fence, a textured pavement area, to support orientation. Take your time. It's always okay to stop, gather your thoughts and reorientate yourself. For more information, get in touch with Mesh on 01273 391 447. Member Voice, our calendar of national events for 2026-2027. We're pleased to offer a number of upcoming military dinners and events for our members and guests to attend. These events bring our members together and offer opportunity for camaraderie, socialising with peers and new experiences in a welcoming environment. For the complete list of events taking place throughout the year, visit www.blindveterans.org.uk/events. Military Dinner, the Royal Welsh. A fantastic opportunity to savour our military traditions, this formal dinner with regular members of the British Army, the Royal Welsh, at Maindy Barracks promises to be an afternoon of laughter, camaraderie and delicious food. The date is the 4th of September. The registration closes on the 10th of July. The venue is 580 Squadron Reserve Centre, Maindy Barracks, Cardiff, South Glamorgan, CF14 3YE. There will be a Founders Awards presentation during the dinner for a small number of highly commended award recipients. and full details can be seen at www.blindveterans.org.uk/HMS Calliope 2026 or telephone 0300 111 2233, and this is for the military dinner at HMS Calliope. A fantastic opportunity to savour our military traditions at this relaxed dinner alongside serving members of the Royal Navy and our supporters of Blind Veterans UK. The date is the 4th of December, registration closes on the 9th of October, and the venue is HMS Calliope, Shore Road, Gateshead, NE8 2BE. There will be a Founders Awards presentation during the dinner for a small number of highly commended award recipients. Military Dinner, RAF Honington. This event is a unique opportunity to savour our military history and heritage, so mark your calendars and get ready for a dinner to remember. The date is the 12th of February 2027. Registration closes on the 18th of December 2026, and the venue is RAF Honington Officers' Mess, Bury St Edmunds, IP311EE. Founders Day Awards will also be presented during the dinner for a small number of highly commended award recipients. Remembrance Weekend Events. This year we are expanding our reach even further for Remembrance and will have a presence at the London Cenotaph, Manchester Piccadilly and the City Chambers, Edinburgh. Events include the Remembrance Service, City Chambers, Edinburgh on Sunday the 8th of November, Engagement Dinner at Doubletree Hilton Hotel, Edinburgh, Sunday the 8th of November. Service at Manchester Piccadilly Station, Saturday the 7th of November. Engagement Dinner at the Holiday Inn, Manchester Piccadilly, Saturday the 7th of November. Service of Remembrance, St Peter's Square, Manchester, Sunday the 8th of November. Sir Arthur Pearson Memorial Service at Hampstead Cemetery on Saturday the 7th of November, the Festival of Remembrance at the Royal Albert Hall on Saturday the 7th of November, Victory Services Club Evening at the Trafalgar Room in London on Saturday the 7th of November, and the Remembrance Parade at London Cenotaph on Sunday the 8th of November. And you can register your interest in any of these events at www.blindveterans.org.uk/events or by telephoning 0300 111 2233. National Creative Programme. This month's VI friendly creative activities you can take part in or from the comfort of your own home. Here are the projects available from the NCP in July. You can take part in as many projects as you like. To request a kit, you can leave a message on the NCP voicemail on 01273 391 447 or email them at ncwt@blindveterans.org.uk. You can also request a kit via the members area of the website. Campervan model. This is a slightly more complex vehicle model with 70 pieces in total. It will come with a step-by-step guide to help you place the pieces. This would be a great model to try painting with acrylic or water-based paints to make a brightly coloured design. Finished model is 10 centimetres high, 10 centimetres wide and 23 centimetres long. And this is for confident beginners or more experienced model makers. Butterfly mosaic. We've designed this mosaic with the help of member and mosaic artist Paul Watts. You'll receive a 22 centimetre butterfly base and your tiles will be separated into labelled bags for you with a step-by-step pattern guide. This pattern allows for a more individual approach. There are some parts where you can experiment and add your own personal touch with mixed bags of filler tiles. Please note, tile colours may vary as we try to use our leftover stock, but the shapes and quantities for each step remain the same. And this is for reasonably complex, so some experience is needed. Locomotive model. We have had a lot of requests for model vehicles, particularly trains. We really hope you enjoy this model of a locomotive. Some of you may have done this before, but you're welcome to take part again. This is a simpler model than some of our others with 30 pieces. The finished model is 13 centimetres high, 23 centimetres long and 8 centimetres wide, and this is suitable for beginners and more confident model makers. Ice cream mosaic. We enjoyed designing this summary mosaic for you to take part in. The design has 5 steps to follow and your tiles will come pre-sorted in label bags for you. The design is a vanilla ice cream with either chocolate or strawberry sauce and a chocolate dipped cone, unfortunately made of tiles and not edible, and this is suitable for confident beginners. Pastels kit. Chalk pastels are a wonderful art medium used to create vivid scenes. This beginner's kit contains a pack of 24 pastel chalks, blending stumps, putty eraser and specialist pastel paper. There are some hints and tips to get used to their techniques and some creative prompts to help you get started. We really hope you enjoy this new medium and would love to see any artwork you create. You can share a photograph via email, suitable for beginners or experienced pastel artists. Also available, beginner's mosaic kit, greetings cards paper craft, botanical sketchbook drawing kit, Jeep model kit, some remaining kits of this more complex model, deer head and woodland trio simple wooden models, and holiday landscapes watercolour painting. Upcoming projects inspired by your suggestions: autumn indoor gardening, peacock wooden model, carousel wooden model, flower pot mosaic, Christmas mosaics and paper craft and more. You can register your interest for these now by leaving a message on the NCP voicemail. Please note, any pre-orders for upcoming projects will be sent out when they are ready later in the year. If you would like to be added to one of our regular distribution lists to automatically receive the projects you enjoy, please give us a call and let us know your preferred craft types. You can choose from wooden models, mosaics, paper craft, drawing, sketching, indoor gardening or outdoor gardening, and you're welcome to take part in as many as you like. Creative collaboration butterfly mosaic. We're delighted to share our new butterfly mosaic design with you, which has been designed collaboratively with member and keen mosaic artist Paul Watts. Paul has been making mosaics for years after being introduced to this hobby during a visit to Blind Veterans UK Centre of Wellbeing. As his confidence has grown, he's experimented with different techniques and has started creating his own designs. Paul uses tile cutters to create intricate designs. He designed a beautiful butterfly mosaic in 2025 using bright contrasting colours in a symmetrical pattern. Paul has given permission for the National Creative Project to use his design as an inspiration to replicate a butterfly mosaic for our members to take part in. We've created the design using shape tiles, no tile cutters required, and our usual step-by-step process. This is a more complex mosaic design, as we know some of you are now very familiar with the mosaic techniques we regularly use and will enjoy a challenge. If this is a bit tricky, you're welcome to use the tiles enclosed to create your own design. And remember, you can always ask family and friends for help. Mosaic art is very tactile. You can use your sense of touch to feel where the tiles need to go and make sure they're lined up with the edges of the base. To make this craft more accessible, we hand sort all the tiles into labelled bags and create a step-by-step design so you don't have to sort your tiles out yourself. We also include a large piece of black paper to use as a contrast background, glue with a precision novel and tweezers to help with smaller pieces. We hope you enjoy having a go at the butterfly mosaic. We've also got our simpler mandala mosaics and the beginner's mosaic kit to get used to the technique and build up to trying something more complex. Please get in touch with Lucy Bradshaw if you'd like to discuss getting started with creating your own complex mosaic designs via ncwt@blindveterans.org.uk. Quiz time. Test your general knowledge. There are 10 questions. I will read the questions and afterwards read the answers. So, question number one. Which country has the bigger population, Scotland or Ireland? Number two. In the website browser address bar, what does the www stand for? Number three. Before the Beatles were formed, John Lennon, Paul McCartney and George Harrison were members of what group? Number four. What is the largest mountain range in South America? Number five, which country consumes the most chocolate per person in the world? Number six, how many brains does a leech have? Number seven, the musical Cats is based on a book by which author? Number eight, in a game of poker, what does a flush consist of? Number nine, what is the only type of bird that can fly backwards? And number 10, what is the study of insects called? And now the answers. Number one, Scotland. Number two, World Wide Web. Number three, the Quarrymen. Number four, the Andes. Number five, Switzerland. Number six, 32. Number seven, T.S. Eliot. Number eight, five cards of the same suit. Number nine, hummingbird. And number 10, entomology. Family news, birthdays. Graham Beezer, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 18th of August. Mabel Boyle, who celebrates her 100th birthday on the 14th of August. Thomas Brown, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 31st of July. Dennis Butcher, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 15th of July. Walter Butler, who celebrates his 103rd birthday on the 31st of August. George Durrant, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 4th of July. Frank Gidlow, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 12th of July. Robert Gravels, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 27th of August. William Harkness, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 18th of July. Bernard Holt, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 20th of July. Matthew McKinnon Patterson, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 14th of August. John McCann, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 12th of July. Kenneth Millard, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 13th of July. Gwyneth Pedler, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 23rd of July. Kenneth Phillips, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 4th of July. Marie Redshaw, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 27th of July. Norman Sims, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 19th of August. Joan Tanton, who celebrates her 102nd birthday on the 11th of July. John White, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 25th of August. Arnold Wilkinson, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 15th of July, and Michael Woods, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 12th of July. All birthday information was correct at the time of going to press. Condolences. Elizabeth Fillingham, who died on the 14th of April, she was the wife of Alfred Edward Fillingham. Jean Fowler, who died on the 1st of June, she was the wife of Stanley Fowler. And Barbara Curtin, who died on the 29th of April, she was the wife of Brian Curtin. In memory, it is with deep regret that we record the deaths of the following members, and we offer our heartfelt condolences to their widows, widowers, families and friends. Eric Ambrose of Deal, who died on the 17th of May, aged 100. He served as a private in the Royal Army Medical Corps. Brian Beck of Sheffield, who died on the 4th of May, aged 91. He served as a drummer in the Lancaster Regiment. Gordon Blundell of Hinckley, who died on the 29th of May, aged 97. He served as a corporal in the Royal Air Force. Thomas Botting of Maidstone, who died on the 20th of May, aged 91. He served as a fusilier in the Royal Irish Fusiliers. Graham Keynes of Clacton-on-Sea, who died on the 1st of April, aged 83. He served as a lance corporal in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Peter Chalmers of Punticlin, who died on the 1st of May, aged 80. He served as a marine engineer in the Royal Navy. Ronald Chesterton of Kidderminster, who died on the 1st of May, aged 91. He served as an SAC in the Royal Air Force. Alan Cox of Crawley, who died on the 12th of May, aged 87. He served as a private in the Royal East Kent Regiment. Robert Crook of Preston, who died on the 13th of May, aged 81. He served as a warrant officer in the King's Division. Anthony Croxall of Matlock, who died on the 26th of April, aged 93. He served as an SAC in the Royal Air Force. Ronald Dilworth of Bristol, who died on the 21st of May, aged 99. He served as a sapper in the General Service Corps. Gordon Dodd of Llandrindod, Wells, who died on the 4th of February, aged 88. He served as a craftsman in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Joseph Elsender of Chester-le-Street, who died on the 1st of May, aged 87. He served as a driver in the Royal Army Service Corps. Simon Evans of Birmingham, who died on the 1st of May, aged 58. He served as a guardsman in the Coldstream Guards. Keith Gilbert of Frodsham, who died on the 7th of June, aged 91. He served as an able seaman in the Royal Navy. Kenneth Griffiths of Port Talbot, who died on the 23rd of April, aged 95. He served as an AC1 in the Royal Air Force. Brian Hodson of Grantham, who died on the 18th of May, aged 94. He served as a lance corporal in the Army Catering Corps. John Holloway of Littlehampton, who died on the 21st of May, aged 102. He served in the Royal Navy. Christopher Holt of Stratford-upon-Avon, who died on the 26th of May, aged 63. He served as a private in the Royal Pioneer Corps. Idris Hopkins of Bath, who died on the 24th of May, aged 95. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Army Pay Corps. Roger Halston of Maidenhead, who died on the 1st of March, aged 90. He served as a signalman in the Royal Signals. Brian Jackson of Portsmouth, who died on the 4th of June, aged 92. He served as a leading seaman in the Royal Navy. Lawrence Jeffrey of Aylesbury, who died on the 1st of May, aged 98. He served as a regimental sergeant in the Grenadier Guards. John Jones of Port Talbot, who died on the 14th of May, aged 90. He served as a private in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. Mikolai Kidzeko of Bolton, who died on the 29th of April, aged 101. He served as a private in the Polish Army Resettlement Corps. Derek Legas of Horsham, who died on the 1st of May, aged 92. He served as a private in the Royal Army Service Corps. Robert Leedham of Darlington, who died on the 1st of May, aged 91. He served as a corporal in the Royal Signals. Conway Lonsdale of Pontypool, who died on the 1st of May, aged 95. He served as a leading radio mechanic in the Royal Navy. John Marsh of Worcester Park, who died on the 27th of May, aged 94. He served as a flying officer in the Royal Air Force. Alec Penston of Shanklin, who died on the 28th of May, aged 101. He served as an able seaman in the Royal Navy. Colin Perks of Ross-on-Wye, who died on the 21st of May, aged 92. He served as a private in the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. Edward Perry of Poole, who died on the 10th of May, aged 76. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Robert Bob Petford of Stourbridge, who died on the 27th of May, aged 89. He served as a gunner in the BOAR. Ronald Pottle of Gosport, who died on the 11th of May, aged 91. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. John Reed of Seaford, who died on the 20th of May, aged 94. He served in the Royal Engineers. Alan Rothwell of Stockport, who died on the 15th of May, aged 89. He served as a private in the South Lancashire Regiment. Kenneth Shufflebotham of Stoke-on-Trent, who died on the 29th of May, aged 89. He served as an SAC in the Royal Air Force. Jack Skirchley of Derby, who died on the 20th of May, aged 93. He served as a corporal in the Sherwood Foresters. Barry Stevens of Aylesford, who died on the 1st of May, aged 94. He served in the Hussars. Frank Taylor of Redcar, who died on the 27th of May, aged 98. He served as a gunner in the General Service Corps. Charles Tebbit of Kettering, who died on the 7th of June, aged 86. He served as an acting Lance Corporal in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Frank Timmis of Shildon, who died on the 20th of May, aged 88. He served as a private in the Durham Light Infantry. And Brian Varley of Leeds, who died on the 14th of May, aged 92. He served as a trooper in the Royal Armoured Corps. Did you know that we can set up online tribute pages for the loved ones of staff, members and supporters? Find out more about setting up a tribute page at blindveteransuk.muchloved.org. Contact details. The contact address for Blind Veterans UK is 126 Fairley Road, Slough, SL1 4PY, and the telephone number is 0300 111-2233. The Member Support Hub mesh telephone number is 01273 391 447. New members. Anyone who may be eligible to join Blind Veterans UK can telephone our membership department on free phone 0800 389 7979. The Rustington Centre telephone number is 01903 945 300. The review editor telephone number is 0300 111-2233, or can be contacted on revieweditor@blindveterans.org.uk. Feedback. To give us feedback on any of our services, please email us at supporter.services@blindveterans.org.uk or telephone 0300 111-2233. Donations. To make a donation, simply telephone 0300 111-2233 or visit blindveterans.org.uk/donate. To listen to a review on Alexa, the command is Alexa, ask tune in to play Blind Veterans UK review. If you have any problems getting it to work, please contact the Mesh helpline on 01273 391 447. If you would like to receive your copy of review in a different format, please contact your community support worker or Rovi for more information. Remembering the Battle of the Somme, you could win £15,000. Will you keep 110 years of support alive by entering the VIP raffle? Telephone 0300 111-2233 or play online. The raffle closes on the 18th of September. The draw takes place on the 25th of September. No under 18 allowed to enter. No prizes will be paid to anyone under 18. Full terms and conditions apply. Please visit raffle.blindveterans.org.uk/rules for more details.